Waterloo Radio.
All right, you're listening to Sound FM 100.3, mono a mono right here.
Thanks for joining me, Steel.
Yeah, and we've got a special thing here. We're not doing the battle tonight. We've got another band in the mono a mono studio here.
The environment.
One of the bands from our intro there that we play every week. And this is a pretty prolific Canadian band, legendary Canadian band here that's released hits in the 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s. They're still releasing albums here. 5440. We've got Neil Osborne here and Brad Merritt right here in the studio with us. Welcome, guys.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
We're extremely excited to have you guys here in the studio with us today. So this is a great treat for Waterloo and Sound FM.
Yeah. And us in general.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, this is possible. You guys have been playing shows at Friday. You played the Empire Rock Fest in Belleville. Saturday, Rock the Park in London. And you've got a bunch coming up in Lockport, Bala, Ontario, Deep River, Ontario. Then you're back in BC, a few more BC shows. And then we've got the Gold Guts and Glory tour beginning.
Yeah.
So it seems like you guys are always playing shows.
That is what we do.
That is how we make our money.
That's how we make our living. That's right.
Yeah.
But it seems, especially in the summer, that you guys are such a perfect fit for kind of like a festival type show, and it must, like, I'm guessing it's because of your songs fitting so well, like sing along songs that people can kind of connect to. And
I'll tell you, you go ahead.
We just did this the thing in London, whatever you call it, the Rock something,
Rock the Park,
yeah, Rock the Park, yeah, with Boston and REO Speedwagon and Prism. Nice. And it was really neat because, you know, some of these festivals that you do, I mean, like you say, we've been around all these decades, so maybe it's us, maybe it's some of the bands, you know, more in the 90s, it was all attitude, chip on your shoulder,
sure, yeah.
You know, testosterone kind of thing flaring up with all the bands that were around in those days. But these classic rock bands, you know, from the 70s, it was total tailgate party to backstage.
Nice.
They all had their lawn chairs and their families and in a circle, and we did our show. We had a lot of people singing along to a lot of the songs, and
yeah, for sure.
Tom Schultz came up to us and goes, "Wow, that's really great. The crowd knows your songs." You know, he didn't know. But that's okay. He came up to us, right? You know,
yeah.
And same with the REO Speedwagon guys. I mean, they came up and, you know, started chatting. Like, it was kind of nice. So
cool. Well, you mentioned that you'd played with Boston. Was it Boston the night before?
Yeah, both nights Boston.
Had you ever played with any of either of those guys before?
No. This was a nice first.
Yeah.
With so many decades of great song, how do you come up with a set list for a show like that?
I have abdicated that responsibility completely.
He has.
It's funny. Yeah, I mean, I give it to Dave now. We just let Dave do it because he seems to think he knows what he's doing and what's the best for the show and all that sort of stuff. I can pretty much play whatever you put in front of me.
Sure.
I like to think I can anyway. But the idea of... So once in a while, depending on if I really, really care about the show, I might go, yeah, we should save that one, or maybe we should open with this one.
Right.
Depending on the event. But generally, Dave's got a good grip on it. I mean, he's the new member, right? He's only been in the band 10 years.
He's the new guy.
Yeah, and he has a little bit of a outside looking in aspect to him. So
probably as a fan, more like,
yeah, he was
for
a fan,
a long time.
And so he says there's 10 songs sort of that we have to play every show.
Right.
So when we're opening for Boston, that's, you know, we get maybe 11 songs. So, you know, so we have to play all the ones that are kind of the popular ones that were on the radio. You know,
Are there ones that sometimes maybe Dave misses out that you wish you would play more that aren't the hit singles and all that stuff?
Yeah, you know. Well, if it's a 90-minute set, we can round it out, or he rounds it out, and we've thrown in a couple of anomalies here and there. Usually we feature the latest record, and You know,
that was a good idea.
So, or
they tell us that.
Something we're writing. Yeah, so, and believe it or not, it doesn't leave a lot of room. You know, you got you get six songs that you can, six out of probably 130 or 40 songs released to choose from.
So, about 2 years ago, you guys played the Green Album.
Yeah.
And almost, or entirely from start to finish.
Yeah, in order. For what it's worth.
Well, and then did a subsequent set after that.
Yeah.
With mainly hits from different albums and things like that. Will there be, perhaps in the next 10 years, another album kind of re-release tour, something like that? I've got a good name for one.
You go first.
Yeah. What do you got?
I've got Trusted by Smiling Buddha Tour.
Yeah. I like it. Yeah.
In the next 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah, those are good records.
I didn't see either of you writing that down.
I think I can remember most of it.
But do you have any plans to kind of do something like that coming up, or another tour
not
like that?
Not really. You know, we did that because it was the 25th anniversary of that record.
Right.
Yep. And it was our, a lot of people consider, you know us as that's our first album. In fact, it's our second, but that's okay. So that seemed like a fun thing to do. What I enjoyed mostly about that is that we really played it good. You know, better than I think then in the day.
Then back then?
Well, maybe we weren't as young and fresh, but we were really solid on the tunes, I can tell you that.
Nice.
Right? After 25 years of playing it, you got it down.
You kind
of
own it.
Yeah, you get something goes right.
Yeah, exactly.
You were talking earlier about getting a chance to play songs we don't normally get to play, and of course playing that record was that. There's only two songs on that record that are in our set, so the other six are songs we haven't played for years and years and years. So that's a real treat for us as well.
Yeah.
Like being able to play Being Fooled, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we sort of had a grand plan for that kind of reliving old records.
Yeah.
You know, I've been with Show Me, which is probably inside the band the least favorite record because it was the most produced.
Right.
I have all the demos.
Right.
That we did, and so I was slowly starting to remix them all, but it's a lot of work, man. So it was going to be Show Me remixed like it should have been.
Right.
You know, like McCartney did Let It Be.
Yeah.
And then Fight for Love was going to be just acoustic guitar, you know, and then we were going to sort of recreate all the records, but.
Yeah, too much work?
We're just too busy. We're also making new records. We're also, you know, being on the road and then also getting older.
Yeah.
It's like, there's no time.
Now, you know, when you were doing the Green Album tour, obviously you guys are, you know, very good musicians, but the first night you went to go play the Green Album live on the tour, any sort of, you know, butterflies?
Yeah, there was excitement, for sure, yeah. I would say a little bit of nerves too, which is a good thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Also, I found what was really neat was to be able to go into a little bit of that psyche without getting lost in it. In other words, you know, singing "Holy Cow," for instance, or "Me Island," which you know used to be kind of real epic game changers on stage and back in the day. It's just kind of neat to sort of experience that from a it was kind of neat to go there.
Sure.
It's like, oh yeah, I remember now. It was a mission we were on.
We're going to change the world.
That's right, yeah.
So is there a different, coming up is the Gold, Guts, and Glory tour. Is there a different approach to the set list for kind of a tour that's yours as opposed to like a festival show?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And what that is exactly, we're still defining and talking about. In fact, we've spent the last couple of days, we've got a couple more days here in Toronto where we're working on new songs, and we hope to feature maybe three or four of those, not all in one night, but, you know, one per night kind of thing. So,
yeah.
And there's, you know, we'll be playing some songs we haven't played in a long time. There'll be some alternate versions of some songs. and then the 10 hits that everyone wants to hear. So it's going to be fun for everybody.
Maybe a rejigging or reinterpretation of a song or two. And it depends on where. It could be two sets usually.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Time will tell.
Cool. Yeah, we would kind of cater to the situation a little bit.
Okay.
But then you'd have to ask Dave.
you guys got to clear it with him first.
He writes it. Yeah.
So, and with going back to all these albums, you guys have seen, with your career being so prolific, you've seen kind of the change from vinyl to tape, to CD to MP3, and now kind of back to vinyl and MP3 at the same time. Has the medium change affected kind of what you, how you plan out the music, or I guess it affects the release, but your concept towards any of the albums that you create?
I want Neil to speak to this, but I want to say one thing. We completely ignored cassettes, just so you know.
Skipped over the cassettes.
Yeah. We did release
cassettes. Yeah, no, but we did. The cassettes, right? Sony and Warner Brothers both released.
What do you mean by completely?
Well, what I'm saying is that we didn't think in terms of cassettes.
Oh, gosh. No.
Yeah. You didn't like them.
Didn't like them.
We didn't care.
Yeah.
Although I remember Walkmans. Kind of,
That
was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Take the music portable.
Yeah. And then cassette decks in your car. That was pretty cool.
I would just strap a turntable onto my shoulder. Yeah, that's what I did.
That just walk really slow.
Yeah.
Although with CDs, the CD, like Discmans, you had to pretty much do the same thing almost.
With what?
With Discmans?
Yeah.
Because they would skip all the
time. Yeah, of course. Yeah,
that's right. And then for a brief, I remember going to a Sony meeting, you know, a Sony Brass, and they were selling the, the mini disc?
The mini disc,
yeah. We had a few Dear Dear albums released on this mini disc. Yeah. It was going to be the next big,
the new format, yes.
Actually, I remember.
I think it was big in Japan.
Steel, yeah, exactly. Steel did like an exchange with the Japanese students back in the day. And I remember
one of them
bought you one for a gift. And everybody was jealous of him, and then nothing ever happened. Yeah. So we weren't jealous anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
But in addition to kind of the medium change and the high or kind of the popular style of music has changed too. So in the 80s it was kind of experimental, in the 90s grunge, and then kind of got to more pop. But 5440's kind of been popular throughout and not really changing to the style. You've kind of stayed with a similar style throughout. How do you think your style has been able to kind of bridge generations and different decades?
You're looking at me. Well, you know, I want to go back to the medium.
Because
Neil skipped over that.
I could go to that.
Okay, why don't you talk about the medium, and then that gives me some time to think about this.
All right,
about transcending generations.
Exactly.
Yeah, I wasn't really clear on the nature of the question because that is a loaded question.
Yes,
the medium change.
See, and we tried to come up with really deep questions because we
not to stump you.
We knew that you've been on the radio before. Yeah, so we had to come up with some good questions here that we were hoping people hadn't asked.
Well, first of all, the medium, as far as a product that you're selling, has obviously changed the nature of how bands can be successful and make money. Right? I mean, record companies have to get involved if they're going to get involved, and a lot fewer of them do, and there's a lot less money. I mean, we come from the golden era. Yeah. I mean, we really did have, ungodly amounts of money spent around us and on us.
Yeah.
Never quite reached our pockets. But,
we saw it.
The day, I remember talking to, Gord from, Gord Sinclair from The Hip, and, he's like, remember the days of the $150,000 video? What a waste of money, It's like, well, that's what they insisted on, the record companies, right?
Yeah.
This is what we're going to do. We're going to throw you in a puddle somewhere and whatever. So there's those resources because those record companies aren't milking, the band and the public like they used to.
Mm-hmm.
Those aren't there. But what's happened also is that the quality, I guess, is suffering a little bit in some respects, and in some other respects, in terms of being able to record on a computer, and everybody can have a home studio that's as good as anything Prince ever used, you know, in their basement.
Yeah.
So it's a very complicated issue. My newest thing is I'm really down on, like, you know, Zuckerberg and, you know, all these computer guys that have made gazillions of dollars basically finding out ways to give free content to people, you know,
yeah,
or other people's content, you
right
know what I mean? I know this is sort of a simple way, and I'm working on this theory, so this is my first time kind of jazzing
oh,
it out in
great
public.
All right.
But it's like they're the new evil. They're the new Starbucks. They're the new Walmart. Is the Facebooks? Is the Google? Is the Steve Jobs? Maybe rest in peace. You know, the Apple. I live for the day when these people fall and those companies fall. You know, because they want their market share, but they took ours.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I got nothing against everybody getting, you know, what they can because it's available.
Yep.
But it does. It has created a, you know. And then I read an article in the Globe and Mail the other day about publishing. Novelists and writers, right?
Yeah.
And how the quality of that, in a sense, suffers because these people can't afford to pay advances if you're downloading this, you know, book on your iPad.
Yeah, the authors were getting advances.
Yeah, and so they have to work at Walmart, you know, to pay their bills.
Yeah.
And so, you know, quality in some respects suffers, and it's just difficult for me to talk about. But I think I'm firmly based in the correct camp about this. These people are the new, you know, megalomaniacs that have got to fall.
Which actually leads us to a question that we were going to address later on, was with the whole, like, the social media and whatnot, it's kind of, do you guys view it, I think I really know what the answer is now, as a necessary evil, or... As because it is free media, like, you can put yourself out there at the same time with, but, you know, it's also, you know, something that, because a lot of bands have embraced it, you know, you guys are definitely not a band that's going to get left in the dust because you're not embracing social media, but there definitely, I think, bands out there, if you don't get on that horse or get someone to get on that horse for you, you're going to get left in the dust.
Oh, yeah, it's another way to communicate, and it's, the like I said, you know, the old way was hard to get in. There was gates, you know, you had to get a record dealer, blah, 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 and then sort of once you got through some of them, maybe you got a shot and you got on radio. Like that. Nowadays, it's good in the sense that anybody can come from anywhere and make it, but it's also so sort of inundated that everybody is doing.
Exactly.
I mean, who do you know that doesn't have a band?
Yeah.
That doesn't have a video on YouTube. Yeah.
So instead of the filter being the record company, which controlled distribution, the filter now are tastemakers who will help you discover stuff which is good and separate the wheat from the chaff, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you could, you know, make a career on singing a song about the day Friday and going to school with your friends.
Yeah, that's not a career.
Maybe career was a little bit of a strong word.
I went to notoriety. I went and saw Batman the other day with Dave and his brother. You know, and they had all those commercials. You know, before the movie, which they never used to have. Nope. By the way, when there was record companies, but every commercial had something to do with your cell phone. And I looked over at Dave and I said, remember this year, 2012, the year of the cell phone, because it'll be sometime in the future when, you know, it was all about that thing.
Exactly.
Or whatever. So this is all temporary right now.
Yeah.
So you got to say that when you point to that thing, you have to say that. Well, he's pointing at a computer.
He's pointing at...
What is that?
At an extremely large tube monitor.
Yeah.
Which is obsolete.
Yeah.
Except in
The Beach with Leonardo DiCaprio?
Yeah.
Remember when it came out?
Yeah.
And they had all those weird apples, the weird ones, the, what were they called, those things? The colored ones?
Oh,
they look so futuristic and modern and wild.
Was it just that they were IMAX?
Oh, you're talking about the old IMAX.
The IMAX, fruit-colored, weird-looking one. Yeah, remember that?
And the circular mouth.
And it was so, like, modern and edgy. And then 2 years later, you watch the movie, and you're like, this is so dated. Ooh.
True enough.
You know, What are we, we're going to be here for an hour and a half or so. We're going to get off topic here a little bit here,
which is great.
That's to be encouraged. Sure. Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, it's I'm still working on that theory of I'm not sure what's going on, and you know, I don't want to you know sound like a one of those you know dinosaur artists that's like, ooh, downloading has robbed us and stuff like. But I have gone back and forth a few times, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah.
And I'm not going back necessarily, as I'm looking ahead and going, there's something not right. It's not the big evil record company anymore, because those guys are gone.
Yeah.
Right? But it's the big evil Steve Jobs, Zuckerberg, Google Schmoogle guys, whatever they are. And they don't want to give up that power. They don't.
No. Yeah. Well, in kind of it's more of a in a smaller way, they like even in their own mediums, they've on Facebook, they've made it more difficult for artists to even get themselves exposed on Facebook.
Yeah.
Because now even if someone likes you, I used air quotes there, you won't necessarily see your updates and whatnot, because the band has to pay some sort of percentage to Facebook.
Yeah, yeah, they're
in order
trying to monetize all this stuff. Yeah. So the money is being taken, but you know, you're going in to get your free content or connection, but you're paying for it to a different person.
Exactly.
You're paying, you know. You know the band Gang of Four?
Yes.
Yeah. I heard them on the radio last year, and they were all on about this, and I was kind of like, whoa, this is radical stuff, man. But which is funny, because Gang of Four was one of the bands that inspired our band to be a band.
Right.
And so there they were talking on some show, you know, about how Apple was evil, and I went, no way, I'm a big fan, this is terrible, I can't believe this. What are they saying? I love these guys, so. But I've come around, I get it now.
So have you denounced all things Apple?
Gosh, no. That's the other thing. Yeah.
Should I hide my iPod?
I'm working on a book idea. Okay. In my book, it's called It's Okay to Be a Hypocrite. And the first chapter is all about how that word is way too valuable in terms of it means way too much to people. Like, ooh, you're a hypocrite. You may as well be Hitler, right?
Right.
No, it's not that bad. It's okay. It's okay to be against an oil company and go buy gas for your car. It's okay to do that.
Yeah.
As long as you're not maliciously, intentionally hurting anybody. It's like that all the time. Or, you know, I went off, you know, about playing with Boston and REO Speedwagon and Prism, you know, saying, these are all the bands I hated in high school. We were on a mission to make sure these bands never existed. But at the same time, I loved playing with them, you know. Yeah, it was like, yeah, cool, you know. And I still have both sentimentalities.
Sure.
About it.
So you didn't spit at them when they came to say hi to you?
No. Yeah, that's the thing, right? I'm a hypocrite, but that's okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, downgrading the importance and value of that word is really going to make the world a better place.
Right. So when is this... when can we expect the
once again, I'm kind of writing it right in front of you here.
As we go. you're gonna reference
we've got that much time.
I'm testing it out on you.
So you're going to reference the podcast afterward?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I like that.
So, this podcast will be kind of a beta test for us. So we're looking to get some feedback on some of Neil's theories here.
Sure. Yeah. Yep. Brad will call me up. We got 4 likes. It was the 4 of us in the room. 5.
Okay, I'm going to bring it back to something different. Completely change directions here. So this is the generic band experience question. You guys have been around a while, and you've had peaks and valleys likely to your career. What would you say is the single most epic moment of your career?
Other than this interview?
Excluding today.
Excluding today. Well, it's the way careers work, and I've actually studied them as well as experienced one. Is that they go like this?
Yes,
that's what he just said.
Yes,
no one can hear.
Right,
what you're showing.
Okay, see, I'm going up and down with my hands.
He's
you know?
Making a sine wave with his hand.
Exactly. Thank you. Yeah, you need that. Yeah, this is good. So there is not one. I guess there's a few which stand up. I've got my hands in the air now.
Yes, his hands are in the air.
He has his hands in the air.
He just scratched his nose.
Exactly. So let's just go over some of them.
Okay.
I can't. I don't think I can do it any kind of Neil particular order here. But you know, one was kind of neat was when we signed to. I need one of those two, please. Mm-hmm. If I get that Moses, that's perfect.
Are you going to say anything? I can do it in about 30 seconds.
Well, okay. If you jump in here anytime, well, I was going to say that we're coming back from that Western Canada tour in 85, 86, when it was. Thank you very much. And finding out that Warner Brothers wanted to sign us to a record deal. Because back then, in 1986, it was all about the record deal, you know. And that was a pretty neat thing. And unfortunately, we had no experience. We didn't realize that, you know, having a record deal didn't mean that you were going to have, you know, great success or whatever. But it was a phenomenal thing.
Sure.
And then a bunch of shows. And now I'm skipping way ahead to 2006. But, you know, opening for the Rolling Stones at the Saddle Dome in Calgary and meeting all of them and talking with them and spending some time with Keith Richards in his dressing room and hanging out with Ronnie Wood and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's absolutely unbelievable and, you know, it's fantastic. What else? I mean, we used to come to Ontario. Well, put it this way, when we signed to Warner Brothers in 86 and we were going up and down the west coast of the United States. That was kind of our area. And we went actually as far east as Winnipeg, too. We did some Western Canadian swings as well. Never went to Toronto. So we came to Toronto in the summer of 86, be June, and we didn't have, you know, we'd never driven there. So we drove all the way across the, you know, the Canadian Shield, which takes, you know, 2 full days, just in case you've never done that before. And that's a great story, actually, because we drove pretty much straight, and then we finally gave up and said, that's it, we got to get some sleep. So it's like 4 o'clock in the morning, we pull into Parry Sound, you know, home of Bobby Orr.
Yeah.
And we knocked on this, got the motel owner up to give us some motel rooms, and we got in about 5 o'clock in the morning. Everyone got a motel room, getting some sleep, and then about 9:30 in the morning, this woman starts banging on a motel door to get us out. And what was that all that about? Anyway, so we all left at 10 o'clock in the morning. Drove down to Toronto, took about 4 hours. Went down the 400, got on the 401 heading east. And we see Yonge Street. Yeah, Yonge Street's in Toronto. That's how you get to downtown Toronto. We took Yonge Street all the way down.
From like Barrie?
From the 401, actually. So it took us, you know, 45 minutes to go, whatever. Rather than... Anyway, so we don't know. I mean, anyway, on that little trip, we got the radio station on, which was, you know, Spirit of Rock, what's called 102.7, whatever it was called.
CFNY.
Yeah.
CFNY.
102.1.
Yeah.
102.1.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Well, sorry, 102.1, sorry. And then they play our single, Baby Ran. And it's the first time we've ever heard it on commercial radio. It was always on campus or community radio, you know, which... And that was another little highlight for us, for sure. And then we got down and we played a show at the Diamond. I don't know if we did one or two nights, but anyway, sold out show. So the first show we ever did in Toronto was, you know, sold out show. And then we used to play the Forum in Ontario Place, and it'd be like 10,000 people to see us. So a lot of sort of Southern Ontario highlights in the 80s.
Sweet.
Yeah. Nice. And that's it.
Neil, any?
Well... First thing is, I never knew I had a career until 10, 15 years in.
Right.
And somebody said that word to me, and I went, are you talking to me?
Yeah.
Because we didn't make money for 10 years. And then even, you know, then it was like now, kind of just keeping on working.
Right.
So I never thought of it as a career. And then there's a certain point you look back and you go, I guess you could say it's a career. There's enough behind me. And I'm going to younger bands going, listen, Sonny, that it's a career. But it's got to be the first gig. It's got to be a big highlight, an important step. You know, that first step into the, as your band, and you know, we're still that same band. That was a big moment.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you guys have, like, so many good songs. A lot of people cover your songs. Is that... a highlight? Like, do you enjoy hearing other people cover your songs, or is that a highlight, or not so, or indifferent, or?
Oh yeah, yeah. I would like to hear more.
Yeah, I think it would be great having my song that another band covered on their best of album. I think that would be an interesting thing, which is your I Go Blind is on Hootie and the Blowfish is best of album.
Oh, they have a best of?
Yeah.
Good.
I did not know that.
No.
See, oh, we learned something.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, that is neat.
And I guess
I would agree with you there.
Now that you've, we're getting a first-hand account of these guys learning that their song is on someone else's greatest hits album.
Well, I'm going to go into I Go Blind here. This will give us a minute to regroup, grab a new drink, and we'll come back and we'll have more right here on the Mono a Mono show with 5440. Neil Osborne and Brad Merritt right here in the studio with us. This is I Go Blind. Right here on Sound FM.
I'm trying to
All right, you're listening to the Mono A Mono Show here on Sound FM 100.3. And we're talking with Neil and Brad from 5440 right here on Sound FM. We've been through a bunch of stuff. I've got a deep question now here for you guys. Yeah. Well, I think it's deep. I don't know. now, one of your members, so Dave Genn is a former Matt Good player, and Matt Good recently has been kind of criticized for commenting on the U.S. gun laws and things like that while he was touring in the United States. But you've got a bunch of songs as well that kind of touch on social injustices, kind of like I Go Blind. And how are you guys able to pull it off without getting the criticism?
Sometimes we have
got
the criticism, which anytime you're going to, I don't know, try and challenge what's perceived as the status quo, that's going to happen. But I think that, like, for instance, you might be referring to a song like One Gun, which I always use as the platform to say something, especially when it involves something that's violence.
Yeah.
If you listen to the sentiment of the song, it's quite simply, how can you love when there's this violence going on? Mm-hmm. So the intention is always good. You know what I mean? It's not... although there's nothing wrong with, you know, something like Bruce Coburn saying, if I had a rocket launcher, you know, that song sure worked on me. I loved it. But I don't really sing that. Do you know what I mean? I don't really preach that way.
You don't get up on a soapbox and...
Yeah. I mean, he can do it, and it's great, but... so I think that, and then we also, in the context of a set or a show, you know, we balance it out with good times. It's like, you know, and once again, it's okay to be a hypocrite. It's okay to say, you know, it's like, you got to turf, you know, George Bush, and this song's for the ladies. You know, you can do that. I don't see any problem with that.
So that's kind of like the lot is to come back out of kind of the tough social issues to not kind of fall, like, I imagine at some point you don't want to segregate a fan base
and alienate them.
Yeah, no, that's right. And you got to be sensitive a little bit to that, but at the same time, you know, myself, sometimes the passions they overtake me a little bit.
And that's what you would want, is for it to be passionate music and write about something that, like, fires up.
Yeah, and there are the fan types that don't like that. Don't like to be told what politics they should be or whatever. But, I mean, you know, once again, I don't think there's a problem either way. I don't think there's a problem if you want to do it. I don't think there's a problem if you don't want to do it. I don't think it's a problem if you do it for one song and the next song, forget about it.
Yeah.
You know? You know, we're doing a show in Victoria that's proceeds going to Amnesty International. You know, we've done stuff back in the day with the Clackwood Sound and the clear cutting in BC and all of Stein
Doctors
Valley.
Without Borders.
Doctors Without Borders. A lot of that sort of stuff. And, you know,
Women's Health Center.
I mean, we did some shows when George W. Bush was, you know, running for election, I think the second time around, remember?
2004.
Yeah, whatever. And, you know, in the States.
No, it was 2004.
Of course it was. In 2000 states. 2000 states. Isn't that funny? This is what's happening now. We're like Walter Matthau and the other guy.
Probably
Jack Lemmon.
Yeah. We're just sitting back.
We're grumpy old men.
We're sitting back. We got bags of popcorn here. We're just watching the show.
You know, saying that, you know, outright, this is bad news. Like, you have no idea, you Americans, what this is doing to your reputation worldwide and blah, 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 blah. You know. You get a little excited, but at the same time, people just want to have a good time, so you got to let them do that.
Yeah.
I think the best example of this type of reconciling the I wouldn't even call it conflict, but just understanding is really the Dalai Lama, right? There's a dude that his country's taken over by China, lots of bad things, he's in exile, but he's always laughing and smiling and saying, hey, cool, you know? I'm here. You're here. We're having a good time, right?
I get his tweets. They're very, very positive.
You get his tweets. There you go.
The Dalai Lama is on Twitter.
Yeah. So There you go. I think that, but, you know, and that takes a while to learn that, you know, because I think sometimes you wear it and you get overly sensitive. But I think for us, or for me, it's just like, I'll say my piece and then I can let it go.
I'm the new party.
Can you? You know?
Yeah.
Know.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Cool. Okay, next we want to get into your newest album here, Lost in the City.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll go from kind of a deep question. I'm going to go right into a really not
shallow
deep one. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
My question, and I kind of have parts to it. So why is this mime so mad? Now, I've been watching, and in the video...
Oh, is he mad? Did we use that edit?
That's what it says right on the thing. Why is this mime so mad?
Oh, okay. Right.
Now,
right.
The part one is the Lost in the City video with the mime throughout the video, and he's trying to make people's lives happier, and they're not noticing him and stuff like that. And he ends up, it looks like, in a parking garage, and he's on the top. Part two is another video. He's there, another mime's there, and they charge each other, and it says to be continued. Is part three coming soon? I've got to find out why this mime is so mad.
There's nothing we like more than mime fights.
Yeah. Really? Yeah. No, which mime? They're both, because the one sort of attacks the other one, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure which one it's referring to, but...
Because there's the mime in the Lost in the City, that's the main character in the Lost in the City video,
yeah.
But then at the end, it's the
He's
mime...
He's the one that attacks the
There's
other
the mime
one.
From yeah. all your promotional material.
Right.
Kind of...
That is actually Adam Kittredge, lead singer of Jets Overhead.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think we should explain to people if they want to... find this out for themselves. Right, they can
need to
find
go to
it. You go to YouTube and YouTube 5440 Lost in the City or whatever. It's all over the place, and then you can see what we're all talking about
here.
Get
to that eventually.
Yeah.
It's a Buddhist thing, just so you know, if you want to go deep, because we're on the Dalai Lama subject. The other mime is that as an aspect of the mime's mind, that is saying, "You idiot! You jerk! You just made a fool of yourself."
Oh, cool.
So,
okay.
And will that come out in another video?
Just did.
More explanation.
Yeah.
Oh, that's it. This is it right here.
And we thought we weren't getting deep, and now we just got deep.
There isn't really, at this point, the budget to make part three. Unless
if you want,
unless
we'll
the
do
director
it.
Is willing to do it.
But yeah, this is a world exclusive right here. So you guys are really delving deep, even on the shallow questions you're delving deep.
When we get Buddhist philosophy out of a shallow question, this is great.
Now, I heard an interview that, Brad, you did, where you were saying a lot of the themes or phrases from songs in the Lost in the City album were taken from old blues songs.
Did I say that? Well,
you did.
Yeah, I guess I did, because Neil told me.
What?
Yeah, he
handed
everything.
Me a script. You fool!
And so is that kind of a concept for this one? And it's not... Well, I guess there's a little bit of bluesy riffs in it, but it's your...
Rob, you got to look over here and ask Neil.
It's your 5440 music. Like, it sounds... And you incorporated that in?
Oh, yeah. No, the concept... It's a very simple and loose... concept was essentially I just sort of dug around to old blues records, got phrases. You'd be surprised. I wish I would have kept the ones that I couldn't use, because other people used them for songs.
Oh.
You know, everybody from John Fogerty on, kind of thing. But it goes, that's a cool phrase, you know, like Lost in the City, or Good Man Feeling Bad, or pretty much all the song titles and a lot of the lyrics within the songs. Taking those phrases and then putting that into 5440, in other words, into the context of how we would write a song today and how we would view how we want to write a song today. And it should, and it does, still apply. It's like a G chord. You should be able to write a G chord today, a song with a G chord today, like you could, in 1932.
Yeah.
So that's really all it is using that as a catalyst to go somewhere.
And is that... kind of an idea that you use, because after 13 albums, or I guess before this album, after 12 albums, to come up with a new idea or a concept, like, how are you able to just, it just comes to you to kind of go through old blues albums to do that? Or
well, we there's always a sort of every record that we do, we have different processes to create the inspiration or ideas or a way to record it or whatever. So I can, if we think hard enough, we can go to every record that we've done, and there is a different kind of way of doing it, approaching it, looking at it. It's, you know, I mean, not to sound whatever, but like Picasso's blue thing or whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like, okay, we're going to use these limitations, these, or kindergarten. Let's say today class, it's going to be red crayons, construction paper, and scissors, no tape. Right? Or whatever, you know what I mean? And then we're going to make a record this way. So we did a, which record did we do where we just listened to old records?
Was that Casual Viewing?
Might have been.
Where we made the loops on the funk records. We did that for Casual Viewing.
Right. See? I don't even remember.
So we had a DJ that took all these breaks for us, and then he just looped them for us, and then we would jam to the break, and then we'd create songs
out of
that.
Yeah, some old records. Oh, cool. Tell this DJ, we, you know, do the scratch that, we'll record it looping, and then we come up with something, and then we take that loop away. And
Take the loop away.
Wow.
Just to get a different approach to a groove. Yeah.
Which is interesting, too, because, you know, there are some bands that stick to a formula. Like, this is how we, you know, create, and this is how we do it. So to, you know, hear you guys say, well, each time we kind of take a different
approach.
It's a
project.
Yeah, that's cool.
Everyone's different.
Neil and I have limitations. Neil probably less than me, but we both have limitations in terms of playing and even where our ideas come from, all that kind of stuff. I guess we all do. Every person who creates does. So the important thing is to embrace those limitations, but find some way to get out of your normal way of doing things. Because if we all are left to our own devices and show up, I do my Brad Merritt thing, you know. But if I have a little thing which sort of gets me off center a little bit, like, okay, now instead of Matt playing drums, you're going to listen to this, you know, kind of loop break, you know, right. And then you're playing with that, and then it gets me in a whole other world as a player, and then Matt feeds off that, and then it goes that way. So
cool.
Very cool.
So yeah, you have to do that. You have to, and it makes it fun and exciting for us, and then hopefully, you know, the results speak for themselves.
Cool. I would say so.
And in another interview, I've also heard you guys, as well as other people, mention kind of a 100 sound project. Now, this was a little while ago. And 100 songs is kind of leading toward the end of 5440. Is that something?
See, that's part two right there. After that would be part three. Yes, it would lead to the end. You're right.
No, it wouldn't. lead to the end of 100 songs.
But everything leads to the end, though.
But then you would continue... Because I feel saddened thinking of the day when 5440 would cease to exist.
Well, there's a long time before that, because when we're going to end, see, when the Rolling Stones quit, that's our 20-year warning. Okay? Because they're 20 years older than us. So that's okay, so...
Yeah. Yeah, the funny thing is... Oh, wait, not the funny thing is, because you guys already laughed. That was
funny. But funny year thing.
This is what Brad said, like, in the
80s.
Yeah. Oh, really? Was this the 100 songs?
This is a Bradism from the beginning.
Yeah.
When the Stones stopped.
Yeah. Look at the Stones. Oh, this is way before we played with them and met them and all that sort of stuff. It's like, look at the Stones. They're 20 years ahead of us. You know, when they quit, we know we got 20 years, right?
Fair enough.
So he still says that.
Yeah.
But it really goes back.
What if you reach a point where the Stones are just, they just keep going, and you guys are like, oh, damn, you know,
really? Yeah, really? That's the way I look at it. Really?
We have days like that.
But, so I guess the 100 songs project, is it still in effect? And do the Lost in the City songs kind of count towards
there's all kinds of ways you can count that.
Yeah,
I mean, for instance, the record prior to that, whatever it was called, Northern Soul, there was probably 36 songs written. How many made it? I don't know. Was it 11 or 12?
11.
Some B-sides.
Yeah.
Do you count those? You could.
Yeah.
And then for Lost in the City, there's probably 16 songs written. Do you count those?
You could.
Depends on the rules, I guess.
Yeah. Well, hang on a second. I'm working on two other projects. One's 12 songs written. The other is 12 songs written. So, you know, I was telling Tim the other day, it's like, I'm almost there. In one way.
Yeah.
Right.
Hey. I got this.
But as far as 5440 goes, yeah, let's do it that. Released published songs. So we've probably got about 70 more to do.
Easy.
Easy peasy.
And you guys said kind of the concept of an album is dead. Do you still feel that, or
you said that?
Did I say that?
I think so.
Well,
I didn't say that.
No,
no, Neil wouldn't say that. I think we probably disagree here a little bit.
Yeah,
about that. Yeah, absolutely. It is dead. And no, you hold your thought here for a second.
I didn't.
I'm
think.
Speaking. Yeah, you were shaking your head.
That's not thinking.
Neil shook his head.
That's reacting.
That was reacting.
No, I know. You're right, and you're wrong. So
that, yeah, no, I'm saying that. Yeah, but this is point counterpoint, right? This is this is what we do.
This is hardball.
Jane, Chris, you ignorant slut, right? You know? So point counterpoint. So my point is, you know, I would debate that, say that it is dead. And
why?
I would, lots of reasons. One is because this is, you know, pop culture, social media, new way of thinking here. The world is a faster, busier place. People have less time. People make less time. When I was a kid, an idea of a good time on a Friday night was going over to a friend's house with some other friends. You'd bring a few records, and you'd play records. You know, and then you got a little older, you drink beer and play records like we're doing now. And I'm telling you, that doesn't happen now. There's no way that anyone listens to music with a group of people unless they're doing something else, you know. So music doesn't have the place in the world that it used to. So in order to command people's attention, you actually have to have one song, one Katy Perry song, one whatever it is, and that's what actually goes up and people pay attention to. So it saddens me to say this, because I still believe in the album experience, because I still have albums. I play them, I listen to them, and I don't just cherry pick songs. I don't play song 5 that I don't know the title to. I know the names of the songs for the whole record, and I play them in order.
Mm-hmm.
And but most people don't do that. As a generation behind us, it has no idea what in the hell I'm talking about. So that's why I say it's dead. And you throw that on top of that, that record companies don't exist anymore, and people do release music in various formats, and there aren't these filters anymore. So it is all about single songs, 2 songs, 3 songs, 4 songs, smaller packages, more concise. That's why. That's my point.
Like,
and that's why the album
an
is
EP.
Dead.
EPs. An EP.
Yeah. Very small EP.
It's fine. You're done.
I'm done. Done? Yeah, I mean, my point's made.
All right. Neil.
Right. He's absolutely right. But he's at the he's at the end of the poop chute, right? He's at the people receiving the goods. The artist who makes the goods, why it's important. It's so, like, for instance, for us, we kind of make a record every year and a half, 2 years. A lot happens in our lives collectively as people in the world. We reflect this. We create these processes that we were talking about earlier about how to make a record. You know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, stir it all up, and you look at the sky, and you do your rain dance, and out comes your music. You can't do that in a song. You know, that's not the point. The point isn't the song. The point is an experience. The point is a collection of songs to reflect an experience, to reflect a view of the life. That's why I can never look at it any other way. I just can't.
Mm-hmm.
From the other side, I'm just like Brad, right? I don't want to hear the whole fucking album from an artist. I just want to hear the good song, and if I like it, I'll hear more.
Yeah. You know?
But from a creator, nah, there's can't do the one song. It's not right.
I think I'm going to go right down the middle of you two.
Yeah. Well, I want to say that Neil's absolutely right as well.
Well, he's right too. But it's input output, right?
Yeah.
Input.
Right. Yeah.
From our point of view, input, we have to do a whole experience thing.
Yeah.
Output, you know, and we've been there, right? We've been there when we've gone and spent a year making a record, writing a record, producing a record, spending $100,000, and then the record company goes, is there a hit? That's all they care about.
Yeah.
Right? In those days, and still today, actually, you know. And you kind of, that's what it comes to, right? And that is what it's putting on that hat. So when you've done your art, you've got to go out and sell your product.
Yeah. See, speaking from a fan and a music appreciator, that's why I elected to go down the middle, because I think you're both right. I think there are definitely, and I think you put it the best, Brad, in saying that the generation behind us kind of, that's what they want. They just want... It used to drive me nuts when I would listen to an album with like a CD with a friend, and I'm thinking of a specific friend, but I won't name him, where he wouldn't let the song finish and he'd skip to the next one. It used to drive me bonkers.
Yeah, that drives me crazy.
And because I think there are some of us that out there that still appreciate the album experience. I still, when I listen to an album, I listen from beginning to end. And in fact, you know, having the show, I have a rule in my car where I'm not allowed to actually eject a new release until I've listened to the whole thing front to back. Wow. Even if it's horrible.
Yeah.
I will subject myself to that.
Right.
But I think there are people out there. I can't think I'm the only one.
Right.
Me.
Exactly.
There's a few.
But I think you're right that a lot of the, I don't even know what the generation behind this is called, but they are very, you know, they want instant gratification. They want that hit. They want it now. And they don't care what the rest could be all filler. They don't care.
I remember even in the 90s, you know, which is, I guess, our heyday, mid, late 90s, fans yelling, you know, track 3. It was just bizarre to me. Like, what? Do we have a song called track 3? Is that like a train song? Is that like a blues? You know, I'm on track 3, heading towards New York City. I didn't get it.
Track 3, yeah.
Well, I always think that's pretty funny in general, in that most bands have a set list when they go out, and people scream out whatever songs that they want to hear, when you're pretty sure that the band's probably going to stick to the set list that they have, regardless of what you're going to yell out.
Yeah.
So maybe you're right, maybe you're wrong, but... They're probably just going to play what they were going to play anyways.
Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah.
Well, let's get to a couple songs here from the Lost in the City album. I'm going to get to Let Me Be Your Wheel and the single from it, Lost in the City. And then when we come back, we've got some fan questions. And we'll get to some of the plug in the social media and things like that. But first, here we go with Let Me Be Your Wheel right here on Sound FM. You're listening to 5440 on the Mono A Mono Show.
Show. I've been lost in